This is Edwin O'Shea, and this is a review for section 2.3 for Math 235, Calculus 1. This chapter, good news, after the hard slog of section 2.1 and 2.2, where we informally and formally defined the derivative and looked at some of the corollaries of this very careful limit definition of a derivative. Recall it was We defined the derivative of a function at a point C as being the limit of the slope of the secant lines at C. So we had to work very hard to derive a number of derivatives. And now what we want to do is kind of generalize all of the many special cases we looked at into a few much smaller cases. So section 2.3, as the heading goes, it's rules for calculating basic derivatives. Jumping straight to theorem 2.8, notice that in parts A, B, and C, the text is using the Leibniz notation rather than the F prime notation. And again, it's just to familiarize you and to recall the Leibniz notation. And we will use these things now interchangeably. Part A says that the derivative with respect to x of any constant is equal to zero. Part B tells you the derivative of x with respect to x itself, d dx of x, is equal to 1. And part C tells you that the derivative of a linear function, mx plus b, with respect to x, that's what the d dx means. It means the derivative with respect to x, that that's equal to m, namely the derivative of a line with slope m is just the slope of that line itself. For the proof, it points out that we only need to prove part C because parts A and B are special cases, as they are. And part C is exactly just using the limit definition of the derivative. Moving on next to the power rule, and of course recalling, for those of you who've seen calculus before, you might be forgiven by others for thinking that, you know, for thinking before this class that the derivative was defined as the power rule. But as we now well know, it's far from it, and it's just going to be a special case of the limit definition of the derivative. So we see some examples here of use of this power rule, things that you've seen before, namely d dx of x cubed is 3x squared, d dx of x to the 4 is 4x cubed. These are all things that you would have derived in the previous section, in the exercises. And there's a pattern there that becomes clear, and it says that in general, if you've x to the k, that the derivative is going to be k times x to the k minus 1. Namely, the derivative of x to the k is just going to be you move the power down in front and you subtract 1 from the exponent. And that's exactly what theorem 2.9 is saying. Right? Read it through that section carefully. It is saying for any non-zero rational number. In this section, we will just prove it for any non-zero positive integer k, and we will assume that it's true for all these other cases as well. But we'll get to that a little bit later. Okay. So let's look at this carefully. We look at the proof, and it says it's going to prove by cases. Right? Notice that at the end of that second paragraph of the proof, we have the identity z to the k minus x to the k. And notice that that's just a generalization of the a squared minus b squared, namely the difference of two squares. Now, if you expand out the expression on the right-hand side, what you get is the left-hand side. And that's exactly what it suggests that you do in the text. That's quite important. And now, looking at the rest of the proof, looking at the derivative of x to the k, first of all, it writes down the limit definition as a z limit. Next, it takes that z to the k minus x to the k and uses the factoring formula above. Using that factoring formula, you notice that the z minus x above and below the line cancel in that second line there. And so in the third line, with those z minus x's cancelled out, we just have this polynomial that has two variables, z and x. But of course, we want the limit of this polynomial in z and x as z approaches x. But since it's a polynomial and it's just continuous, you can just replace every z with just an x. And what you get is just this polynomial purely in terms of x. And notice that all of the terms in the polynomial are just of the form x to the k minus 1. And it's not too hard to count that in fact there are in fact k of those terms. So you've got k terms all being exactly the same, namely x to the k minus 1. So indeed what you have is k times x to the k minus 1. And that completes the proof. So the careful things to check are this factoring formula given at the end of the second paragraph, and indeed verifying line by line that the derivative of x to the k is exactly k times x to the k minus 1. Note that this is only proof for any k being a positive integer. We will have to work much harder for the other cases, and we'll get to see some of those later. Okay. Let's see. So next, constant multiple and sum rules. Theorem 2.10 is not really saying anything surprising. It's saying that the derivative of a constant times a function is the constant times the derivative of that function. The sum rule is saying the derivative of a sum is the sum of the derivatives. The difference rule is saying that the derivative of the difference is the difference of the derivatives. Note that it goes to some pains to stress the Leibniz notation again, immediately after Theorem 2.10. There's nothing really surprising about Theorem 2.10. If you look at the proof of it below in Part A, you'll see it's just, you know, it's carefully verifying it in the same way that you verified Theorem 2.8 and Theorem 2.9 earlier. It's just careful verification that the limit is indeed what you would expect it to be. No big surprises there. Now, in the next little subsection, you have the product and quotient rules. Now, it's very tempting at this juncture to think that the derivative of a product is the product of the derivatives, and that the derivative of a quotient is the quotient of the derivatives. But that is not the case. So Theorem 2.11, as you can see, you have the product rule. The derivative of a product is the derivative of the first term times the second plus the first term times the derivative of the second. It's probably easier to read than it is to, you know, for me to say it. And the quotient rule is also a kind of an awkward-looking rule, isn't it? We will verify these in class rather quickly, but for now, you should just read these things. So there's some nice discussion of that in what follows with a nice example where you have f of x equal to x squared plus 1 and g of x equal to x cubed. And here it's computing what the derivative of f of x times g of x is. Notice again that it's not just the derivative of this product, it's just the derivative of f of x times the derivative of g of x. It is not that. Okay. Now it goes on here for the proof. The proof looks a little unwieldy, doesn't it? So the first line of this proof, if you just jump to computing f times g prime of x, you'll see the first line is just writing down the definition of the derivative, right? No surprises there. The second line is doing this kind of awkward thing, right? Notice that the numerator, you've added f of x times g of x plus h. And you've also subtracted f of x times g of x plus h. So when you add and subtract that second and third term in the numerator, that's in the second line, you're just adding, subtracting the same thing. So you're effectively adding zero. But now look what you do next. You group the first and second term together in the numerator. And then you group the third and fourth term together in the numerator. And now you notice that the first and second term, you break the first and second term up together and the third and fourth term up together. And that's then how you apply... You get to say that this is a sum of, notice that the term f of x plus h minus f of x divided by h, that just looks like the secant line of f at x. And you also notice that g of x plus h minus g of x divided by h, that's just a secant term at x for the function g. And you want to compute the limit of these terms, but of course, a limit of a sum is the sum of the limits. And then you're just going through things then here very carefully. Right? And that's it. That's as far as the proofs go. Note that that was the proof of the... That was the proof of the product rule. We'd still have to prove the quotient rule as well. We'll talk about that a little bit in class as well. Now, just jumping ahead, example 1, A, B, C, and D. They're all just special cases of all of these, right? Notice that example 1, part A, you have the function f of x equal to twice 5 to the x. Now, it's tempting to think that's a power rule, but notice that it's not a power function. It's an exponential function. And we don't know how to differentiate exponential functions yet. We'll see that in section 2.5, by the way. All right. Part B of example 1, g of x is just a constant, and the derivative of a constant is 0. H of x, part C, you have to expand all these terms out, right? Or similarly, you could just apply the product rule to 2x plus 3 times itself. And note that in part D, you have a composition of two things, and that can't be simplified either, but we will see in section 2.4 how it can be. Look at example 2. They are examples that can be solved using the quotient rule, but they are also examples that can be solved just by simplifying first. That's example 2. Example 3 is differentiating a piecewise function. Note that this piecewise function here is just fine once you're away from 1, and you need some special cases to study what the derivative looks like when you're close to 1. Look below at the pictures. You have a graph of the function f, and you could see it's clearly not differentiable at x equal to 1 because it has this cusp there at x equal to 1. Namely, the limit of the derivative coming from the left is not going to match up with the limit of the derivative coming from the right. Example 4, finally, is finding what's called the antiderivative. That just means the reverse of the derivative. And that's a nice example given there. Okay, exercises will be assigned. But they'll really be very straightforward applications and maybe a few proofs of just what we've discussed. Okay, enjoy the reading. See you in class.